This is URN Sport.
Welcome to the Tuesday Sports Show.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you very much for listening to the URN Sport on this Tuesday evening. We will be discussing over the next hour all the sports news from the past week and previewing what's to come over the next 7 days.
Murray wins! Murray wins it all! This is going to be a tough break. Why? Because we've got a series! And Barrett control this, and the cup is his. He's coming out.
Is URN Sport.
Good afternoon and welcome back to URN. This is your Tuesday Sports Show coming at you this time at 5:26 for a one-off special for this time only. I'm Jeremy Dunn. I'm joined here in the studio by Chris Young, Harry Vode and Alex Buxton. Okay guys, so we're going to kick things off with probably the main events of last weekend's action. That is, of course, talking about the Six Nations and everything that went down. It was an eventful weekend of rugby, wasn't it, guys? We'll start off, I think, probably with the biggest game, obviously, and that was the England match. Alex, what was your thoughts on it?
I mean, it was what we were hoping it was going to be last week. We thought that Scotland would be England's toughest challenge this tournament. However, that didn't prove the case, with quite a resounding win of 61-22. And yeah, I think it was a bit of a mixture between England playing really well with all our main players turning up, and a bit of a Scotland capitulation with their defence being quite porous that game.
Yeah, it's not the Scotland we've seen actually all tournament, to be honest. They've been pretty strong throughout. And one big point, guys, which I think just draw your attention to halfway through, of course, happened during the game, was Stuart Hogg having to leave the field. He went off briefly to be checked by their doctor after a head collision injury that he picked up. Then he came back on the field, but was then immediately called off, and it turned out he'd actually failed the test for it, obviously. Do you think that's going to be worrying for them going into their next game against Italy, of course?
I don't think so. I think given their strength and depth, they've had a lot more strength and depth this tournament than I think people actually have realised, including ourselves. But Stuart Hogg, for me, probably before today, has been the player of the tournament. He's just been absolutely fantastic. And it's a shame to see him get injured. Hopefully it's nothing too serious, given that the Lions tour is coming up this summer. But Stuart Hogg's been absolutely fantastic. And I think it's a shame he had to go off so early, because that really could have made the game a lot more, you know, tight. Given the fact it was a really big win for England, you know, more than 40 points, or something close to that anyway. It's a shame for Stuart Hogg and for Scotland, but he's been brilliant so far, and I think they can hold their head high. Will they do the job against Italy? I expect them, given how good they've been in the Six Nations.
I personally do think it's a bit gutting for the Lions tour, to be honest. I think a couple of weeks ago, we were discussing who we thought should be picked for the Lions tour, and he was in everyone's team. He was a dead cert, and as Chris rightly said, he has been the player of the tournament. And I think he would have been the stand-up players in the Lions tour. So, yeah, we can say that Scotland will probably beat Italy, but most teams would probably beat Italy. So I think he will definitely be a big miss.
I think Scotland also had a pretty terrible run of injuries during the first half.
Oh, like Greg Leglaw, for example, yeah.
Yeah, and they've had they were pretty unfortunate during the game. I think about five or six players got injured in the end, and they made a lot of subs early on as well, which might have disrupted the performance. But definitely from England, it was their best performance of the tournament for sure, and probably showing the world what they are actually capable of.
Yeah, I agree on the injury front, but also the yellow card in the first half really changed the game. They conceded,
well,
I think, 10 points within that period of time, which obviously we still won by quite a big margin, but that is a game changer, that. And I don't think the result would have been quite as comfortable for England without that yellow card.
I think as well, actually, it was a really interesting decision, I thought, a couple of weeks ago when Eddie Jones decided to leave out Jonathan Joseph. I thought that was a bit questionable, you know, putting someone like Ben Teo at outside centre, who, of course, did a really good job for England against Italy. And then suddenly, you know, Ben Teo is not starting anymore. You've now got Jonathan Joseph, and he's gone to score a hat-trick against Scotland, a really well-taken hat-trick as well, who was, of course, a welcome addition to everyone's rugby fantasy team who had him, of course. But no, I think it's just interesting, not only just to see the squad and, you know, the squad and how much depth there is in the squad, but also just how much trust Eddie Jones seems to have in the players.
That's always a sign of a good team, when your substitutes and the players on the bench come straight in and take a first-teamer's spot as well, and do it with such success, like he did against Italy, so... It was a good comeback as well.
That win at the weekend, of course, saw England mathematically now win the Six Nations. We can't be beaten. We have won it, but it's still. But what we're now, I think everyone's now looking forward to is there's two trophies now on the line for this for the game coming up against Ireland in Dublin this weekend. And that is, of course, can England do the Grand Slam? And also, what's probably now been pushed aside, but also one which to remember is, of course, the Treble Crown is also on offer as well, should England be able to beat Ireland in that. So, two massive trophies. Guys, do you think they can do it?
Yeah, I think that they've... I mean, obviously, going to Dublin, we're not in our home ground at Twickenham where we're expected to win most of our games, so it's going to be more of a challenge. But I think the confidence that will come from that performance against Scotland will get us over the line there. And I mean, Ireland had a bit of a mixed tournament, let's be honest. They've lost the other week and they've not really performed to their standards. So I would say that England should win this.
Don't forget the world record as well if we win the game.
I think we break the world record,
so we'll be right up for it, because you're never going to get another chance to break a world record like 19 wins in a row. It would be if we win on a... Is it Saturday? Is it?
It's the Sunday. It's the very last game of the series. I thought at first it was all going to come down to that game. Sadly, it didn't quite live up to 30.
Most people would have picked that game out as a... The tournament ender with a big game to see who won the Grand Slam, but it's not worked out for Ireland. Another defeat this weekend to Wales as well.
Actually, I apologise, Harry. You were right. It is Saturday. It's 5 o'clock. I've just checked that now. It's actually the 5 o'clock game on this Saturday. So I was at fault there. It's not Sunday.
I expect a written apology.
Don't worry, you'll be getting one. But looking at that, then, just in preparation, obviously for England's opposition, Ireland, they suffered a pretty stinging defeat at the weekend to Wales, 22-5 at the Millennium Stadium, and one of the big talking points of that game was Sexton's out injured again. He's literally only been back now for two games of this Six Nations, and he's straight out. That again, looking at the Lions tour, just briefly on that before we get into discussing for the upcoming game, has that now completely ruled him out of the Lions?
I think so personally. I think the wry smile that I saw on his face as he was going off. I know you might think, oh, he's smiling, he's not too bad, but I think it's more of a smile of knowing that it's happened again, it's a recurrence, and I'm not so sure if he'll be able to get picked for it.
That is interesting. I was going to say, I think he's just too good to drop. I think he's just one of those kind of players that, you know, he's served on Lions team brilliantly when we beat Australia, and I think against New Zealand, you do need your best players because, you know, ultimately they are the best team in the world. And for me personally, Johnny Sexton is worth taking. Hopefully by then he'll be able to, you know, be fully fit, because on his day he is great, but ultimately if he is injured, then he's injured. But I think even an injury prone or like slightly injured Johnny Sexton is still like our best fly half option.
Hi, this is Jeff Selling from Sky Sports and you're listening to URN Sport.
Cheers, Jeff. Right, so welcome back to the URN Tuesday Sports Show, and we've run through our predictions and our assessments of this week's Six Nations, and now we're going to go ahead and talk about a new story that broke yesterday regarding the Commonwealth Games. So the 2020 Commonwealth Games will no longer be held in Durban, South Africa. Now, it was originally going to be there, but there's been quite a bit of controversy that has come out surrounding this, mostly due to the fact of whether South Africa actually ever accepted the Commonwealth Games or whether they didn't. It's now been taken away from them formally, and that means it's up in the air and open to be taken. Now, two of the frontrunners that emerge as favourites, guys, are Liverpool and Birmingham, so we could have the prospect of a home Commonwealth Games coming up in 2020. What do we think of on that? I mean, obviously the last one we had would have been 20 years prior to that in Manchester in 2020.
I think Liverpool had always been gearing up for some bid of the Commonwealth Games for a long time. You know, it was one thing that Joe Anderson, the mayor of Liverpool, had been long, you know, campaigning for, long really wanted to do. Well, Liverpool, of course, was the European capital of culture in 2007. And I think he wanted to just throw that stat in, of course. Yeah. And he just wanted to, like, kind of, like, keep everything going in terms of, like, Liverpool's push. But it comes as a bit of a shock, I think, to both Birmingham and Liverpool, who previously had been wanting to make a bid for the 2026 Games when an English bid was considered to be much more likely. However, of course, given what's happened in Durban, with the Games being taken away from the South Africans, it now obviously opens up the door for either Birmingham or Liverpool. I think the odds-on favourites will either be Birmingham or Liverpool. I think Liverpool will probably be the more likely of the two, I think, just given its culture, its history, its recognisability across the world. So no, I would expect Liverpool to win it personally. I think it would be great for the city itself, But also, I think it'd be really exciting to have the Commonwealth Games back in the UK. You know, Manchester was obviously a great success. London 2012 for the Olympics was just phenomenal. And yeah, no, it'd be great to see the Olympics, not the Olympics, the Commonwealth Games come back to England.
Yeah, I do find your point quite interesting about how the Commonwealth Games wasn't expected to be in Britain until, what did you say, 2026?
2026, yeah.
But I think the fact that, obviously, we know that the UK has the financial capabilities to pull off the tournament. They've already got the infrastructure, so we kind of know it's already going to happen. Well, so I think that will increase the likelihood of a country, region like Liverpool or Birmingham taking the Commonwealth Games.
I'd actually go against Chris and say Birmingham are slight favourites because they already host an athletics, I can't remember what the events are called, but they all like
the Diamond League. Yeah.
They already host that,
they
and they already have the stadium set up. I'm not really sure where it would be in Liverpool, and Birmingham is England's second biggest city, so it might be slight favourites. I'll go against you there, Chris.
That is interesting, actually.
Yeah, so there we are. I mean, there's two conflicting opinions, obviously, on where it should be. The one of the favourite things which is being put forward for why maybe Liverpool should get it is it's following possibly in the trend that happened with Manchester. In Manchester, obviously, the Clayton area where Man City now base themselves in, obviously, because that's where the Commonwealth Stadium was built. That obviously all got massively redeveloped and it had huge amounts of investment put into it. Could we see the same thing maybe happening in Liverpool, perhaps?
I think so, just because obviously there is a big regeneration process that has happened in Liverpool. You know, you look at what's happening in Anfield, there is a big push towards, you know, trying to regenerate the area. But even a spokesperson for Liverpool City Council has already said that, you know, they've already indicated the government that they are very willing to host the 2022 games. Vice versa, Birmingham have also been quite strong in their claims, saying that we will have a feasible study completed by the end of the next couple of weeks. But, you know, you kind of look at what happened to London in 2012 when you had like the entire east side of London be completely revamped, like Hackney, for example, which was completely revamped through the Olympics, being able to regenerate the area. It was the same in Manchester, and I think, again, it could really push on and further regenerate the city of Liverpool, which does have a great city centre, but the further you go out, sadly not so much.
Yeah, it is crazy when you go to watch a game at the Etihad, when you compare it to just 10 years ago when a city had just moved into the stadium. The whole area is redeveloped now, new primary schools, new secondary schools, new pitches for football. Obviously, I think City have pumped a lot of money into the local area, but because a big team's been allowed to go into a stadium that was never there before the Commonwealth Games, it could happen. Everton or Liverpool, or even Tranmere, let's say, could even move into this new stadium and develop an area like City have.
Yeah, I don't personally think that is really going to affect the decision between Birmingham and Liverpool, because both cities will probably welcome rejuvenation. They'll see what happened to the kind of Newham area for the Olympics, as Chris said, and obviously welcome the increase in funding, the facilities built, which can improve the kind of social standards in these regions. So I don't think that's... I mean, basically the point is both regions will want it as much as each other, and I don't think that will really influence the decision.
I think it's really interesting to see because, just to follow on what you guys have said, I'm really interested to see who else would be potentially lining up a bit. So Birmingham and Liverpool seem quite confident they'll do something. I think maybe England may choose between one of the two and then put that formal bid forward. But bids are so expensive for these kinds of tournaments. So you look at what's happening, I believe it's at the 2024... Winter Olympics. Yeah, when it was at either Kazakhstan or China, currently for the Olympics or the World Cup after Qatar in 2026, that's the one, sorry. You know, it looks as though the USA have really been the only ones to put a serious bid forward. So having these competitions themselves and having these bids themselves are pricing out a lot of countries, which is good for the UK, obviously, because it means that we're more likely to get them. But I just think it's a really interesting point on the whole.
I think it's a very worrying thing for the Commonwealth Games. This was meant to be the first big event in the first event of the Commonwealth Games in Africa, and the fact that it's gone really shows a worrying sign for the competition as a whole, and probably some more deep-rooted social and economic problems about the continent of Africa, which we can't be that happy about, really. Yeah. It's not looking good going forward for the Commonwealth Games if only Britain and Australia, Canada, the big nations, can afford to bid for it.
Now I'm going to discuss what's been happening in the world of tennis, and I'm going to pass you over then to Harry. You've been keeping up with the India Wells tournament, I believe, that's going on.
Yeah, the Indian Wells tournament, I think, in the desert of the USA. Quite a hot tournament, and it's been a pretty shocking week for British players there. And it's been, traditionally for Andy Murray, it's been a very poor tournament for him. He hasn't got past the third or fourth round very many times, and he went out in the second round again to a world number 129, Vasek Pospisil of Canada, which is a pretty shocking loss, a qualifier for the tournament. And well, he was 4-2 up in the first set, so he's got to be disappointed about that. And continues his mixed form, really, so far this year. Elsewhere, Joanna Konta got knocked out as well in the third round, British women's number one, despite leading by a set as well, which is pretty disappointing. But still, Caroline Garcia, her opponent, 21st seed, not the worst loss of her career, so we've still got a lot of potential in Joanna Konta this year. And just to finally round up Dan Evans and Kyle Edmund, both lost as well in the second round. Lost to good opponents though. Nishikori beat Evans and Djokovic beat Edmund. And Heather Watson, Britain's not very hopeful number two woman, got knocked out by number one Joanna Konta in the round before.
Well, good week for British tennis then, isn't it?
Oh, it's pretty poor. But I think on Andy Murray's point, he must be quite fatigued because he won the Dubai tournament last week, which is halfway across the world. So flying into Indian Wells in the heat as well, it must be tough on the body as well.
Yeah, I got to agree with your point there. I mean, tennis is unlike any sport. I mean, it's the most kind of globalised sport in the world. They're darting off to tournaments across the world, evidently the big players prioritising the Grand Slam, so it's no real surprise that Murray winning a tournament or doing well in Dubai the other week to then come into this tournament in a pretty much the opposite side of the globe is going to struggle a bit. But I think he'll probably have his eyes on the next Grand Slam, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's not too much of a concern, although his form has been pretty sticky this year, especially with going out in the Australian Open very early on there as well, especially when he was favourite after Djokovic got knocked out.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to be the thing which has been hanging over Murray most this season, that early exit from the Australia Open. Of course, though, the next Grand Slam coming up is the French Open, which, as we know, is a favourite for Nadal, who had a very good Australia Open, actually. Obviously, we had a throwback to a 2008 final between Nadal and Federer. But yeah, why do you think it is then, guys, that English players in these off tournaments, as they're sometimes referred to, the ones in between the Grand Slams, they don't seem to quite live up? I mean, obviously, however, on that point, they're just flipping in with it. We did see a win for Britain with Murray in Dubai, but do we think that it's something which the other players should be getting into?
Well, I think it's partly because our general English players don't do that very well in many tournaments, but evidently. Yeah, it does seem to be a kind of thing where they switch off. A lot of the kind of lower rank English players seem to really only step their game up for Wimbledon, obviously playing in front of the home ground. We saw Dan Evans have a really good tournament recently, and also his form has picked up, to be fair. But yeah, I do think it might be the kind of conditions of having to go across the world which might affect them, but equally maybe they haven't got the same quality.
I'd say that they might be slightly lesser ability than Andy Murray, but that's quite easy because pretty much everyone in the world is at the moment. I'd just like to say that Dan Evans and Kyle Edmund had very respectable defeats to the world number four and world number two, and Konta also lost to quite a worthy opponent, 21st seed, so I don't think it's a big concern for British tennis. I think the main concern actually at the moment is Andy Murray's up and down form in terms of Grand Slams and coming up to the French Open, the clay court season, and he wants to be playing as many matches as possible because he's had quite a long time off since the Australian Open.
What potentially could worry me actually is because Andy Murray's tactics has basically been just running and running and running and effectively just tying out the opponent, because you see what he did in the Wimbledon final against Milos Raonic. You know, he's always on the ball. You know, when Miles Ranosh, you know, who serves super fast, you know, Murray would always be there, like, ready to, like, pounce on it, and that requires a lot of speed, that requires a lot of stamina, that requires a lot of concentration. And obviously, he's 30, I think, approaching 31 now, if not 29, approaching 30. So maybe his age is starting to catch up to him a bit. I hope not, but then again, maybe Murray needs to refocus on his style of play, because to lose to what's his name again? Sorry, the one he lost to.
Vasek Pospisil.
Pospisil, that's the one, of course, yeah. Maybe not panic stations, of course, but, you know, of some concern, definitely.
Yeah, I'd agree on that point to an extent. I mean, we've seen Nadal, who's also got a slightly different style, but also who based his game on his speed and an ability to get across the court, and he's struggled with injuries and hasn't kind of been around for as long as we were hoping and expecting. So maybe Murray, who has done pretty well throughout his career to stay in the same level, might be starting to burn out, which I really hope isn't the case.
It's not all doom and gloom, though, for British tennis.
No,
we've
exactly
got a very, very... exciting year ahead, I think, especially with Joanna Konta, who doesn't really get talked about that much on in the media. Maybe something to do with the lack of focus on women's sport at times, but that's a completely different debate at the moment. We could go into a whole show on that. But, yeah, Joanna Konta, she's definitely one to watch out for this year for British tennis. I think she could be a Grand Slam winner or a Grand Slam finalist by the end of this year.
But we're now going to look ahead to another topic that's emerged recently more as a bit of a debate that people are having, and it's regarding boxing and MMA, specifically how much they get paid per fight, and is it getting out of hand? Alex, what are your thoughts on it? Because obviously it's getting slightly ridiculous now, some of the figures that are being talked about per fight.
I mean, it is getting ridiculous. I mean, we always talk about how footballers earn ridiculous amounts and a lot of the top sportsmen. But we're saying, I think you said earlier, it was $6 million did they get? Hay and Bellew?
Hay Bellew got $7 million apiece.
$7 million apiece, which for one fight, which lasted around 11 rounds, is quite ridiculous.
And I'd take that.
Yeah, exactly. And it is getting to the stage where boxers are coming back from retirement, as Hay did, potentially just to get another payday. And now we're actually having a look at the two main fighting sports, boxing and MMA, combined, kind of making a little kind of combination of the fight between Mayweather and McGregor. And I've heard that each of them will be rumoured to get $25 million each for
That's
the fight.
Ridiculous, isn't it? Chris?
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, I think still at the end of the day, boxing and MMA still requires, you know, basically for you to get hit a lot of the time. You know, it's still very physical and it's something I wouldn't want to do. I wouldn't want Floyd Mayweather like hitting me in the face multiple times. That would hurt. But I do see the argument about how it's becoming a lot more commercialized. I think it's really been like that for a long time now. You just think about like Don King, you know, making boxing these great global events, you know, having them in places like was it Zaire, the Rumble in the Jungle, the Philippines, the Thriller in Manila. But $25 million is actually, I think, shortchange compared to what Mayweather made during the Pacquiao fight. It was literally like $180 million.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. I was just actually about to get onto that, because with that fight, the purse for the fight was set at $300 million dollars. So that meant that effectively Mayweather got $5 million dollars per minute of that fight, whilst Pacquiao actually picked up $3.3 million per minute. And bear in mind, that was a massively anticlimactic fight in the end. It was big,
it was
being
awful.
The greatest one we'd ever seen. It was sort of before anyone could really get into it. But like you said, Alex, the idea then maybe of the fact that they've now got to this commercial stage where they're actually thinking of combining these two sports, which don't really have any compatibility, just for one huge financial generator. Why is my question?
That is my part of my main annoyance. I mean, the money in boxing, yes, it is excessive, but that's just modern day sport with TV revenues, and that's naturally going to happen with sponsorship. But the fact that they're willing to cross over two sports out of their diehard fans who respect the sports of what it is, and they're going to disregard that and put these two, I don't even know what format they would fight, to be honest, because they're two completely different fighters, and they're doing it purely so the executives can line their pockets alongside the fighters.
I think it's really just, you know, it really is just all about the money, really. I'm not entirely sure how much tension there really is between Mayweather versus Conor McGregor, but I think it's because, you know, Conor McGregor's, you know, conquered the MMA stage, and Floyd Mayweather has conquered the boxing ring stage. You know, he's fought Pacquiao, he's fought all these great legends, and now it's like, well, who else is there for each person to fight? Hey, why not merge the two together?
Could just go into retirement. Have a nice life with all his millions.
No, but that's boring. But I think, and also I think like HBO have made a lot of their money, you know, the TV channel in America made a lot of their money through having the boxing on pay-per-view, same with Sky Sports now, it's a big source of income for them. So I think that'll be a great amount of pressure from the TV stations, definitely. But I think as well, it's maybe just a bit of competitive edge. Conor McGregor would want to prove himself to be the best. Floyd Mayweather is unbeaten throughout his entire career. So maybe there's that one push. It's like, you know what? I want to come out of retirement. I want to show people that actually I am the greatest.
But the only thing I think there is, we sometimes see fighters, boxers go from like different weights thinking, oh, I've conquered this weight, I'm going to put on a bit more and challenge the next heavyweight, like the next title. That I can at least respect. They've conquered their field and they want to improve amongst that. This is a completely different thing. It's like saying getting your best footballer and your best rugby player and getting to play tennis. I mean, it might be interesting to see what happens, but neither fighter and neither player is specialised at that. And boxing is completely different to MMA. There's an amount of rules in boxing is ridiculous. Well, MMA is more of a free-for-all, see what can happen, really. I mean, they punch them when they're down, while in boxing you've got the referees splitting them up when they start hugging. So I mean, I don't think the fighters truthfully think that they're proving which one's better. I think both are just interested in the commercial aspect.
This is URN Sport.